I'll call this July meeting of the Economic Development, et cetera, Committee to order. Could we please stand for the Pledge of Allegiance? Pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America.
To the Republic.
To the Republic for which it stands.
One nation, under God, indivisible, liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. I'll accept a motion to approve the minutes from the previous meeting of June 2nd, 2020.
So moved.
Second.
Any discussion on that? Okay, all in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Anybody opposed? Aye. Great. Okay, so tonight, just since we have quite a few people as guests in our meeting tonight, I just want to go over how we're going to do the meeting. We have reports from a couple of county departments that we're going to do first, and then we have a few resolutions to look at, and then we'll take any public comment after that. Just want to let everyone know that Resolution 232 has been requested by the sponsor to be postponed, so we'll only be looking at Resolutions 246 and 247 tonight. Does anyone have any questions about that? Okay, so then we'll go right in, and I think our first scheduled presenter tonight is going to be Mr. Remschneider from the Tourism Department. Good evening, Rick. How are you?
Great, Mr. Chairman. Great to see you and the rest of the committee.
Thank you. So I guess basically what I want to do is I'm going to be asking folks to come in over the course of, you know, the time as we go through the year from the different departments in the county and kind of give us an update on how things are going. And I thought that I would, there's a couple, I've had some, you know, constituents call specifically about tourism and about UCAT. So I thought you guys would be the first two for this meeting. Specifically for tourism, I think one of the things that I keep hearing is what is the outlook look like for the county? What are you guys projecting as far as normal, or, you know, obviously it won't be normal, but as far as tourism dollars kind of thing coming in, and if you have an idea about that. And I'll turn it over to you, Rick, and thank you for attending. I appreciate it.
Sure, and anybody want to interrupt me at any time for questions, please do. Yeah, let's start with some of the figures. The first quarter occupancy tax for this year was $288,000. It's down 20.58% from 2019. I guess the silver lining was that 2020 first quarter figures were still 7.9% higher than 2018. The second quarter occupancy tax figures are not complete yet, but we anticipate another drop because obviously a lot of our properties were not open. So we're expecting the second quarter to be down also. The tourism will reopen. Hospitality businesses are reopening or have been reopened. Quite frankly, though, however, you know, there's continued uncertainty about what the pandemic will bring both here and around the country. Tourism businesses are continuing to plan for multiple scenarios. In a Zoom call last week with County Executive Pat Ryan, Deputy County Executive Ellen Wright, Lisa Berger, and myself, and over 70 Ulster County tourism businesses, Mohawk Mountain House CEO Tom Smiley indicated that they had reopened with about 50% occupancy under the social distancing guidelines, and were doing well in the early going, particularly on weekends. They've only been open for a couple weeks. However, there will be some challenges since there will be no or little group business or weddings during the pandemic. Some planned visitors have canceled due to the governor's quarantine order for some out-of-state visitors, too. On a plus side, what Joy Liu reported during that Zoom call, that the pedal-powered operation along Esopus in Phoenicia was off to an encouraging start since they opened Memorial Day weekend. I have to say some businesses have done well during the pandemic, and golf courses have reported brisk businesses. Golf courses report record numbers since it was an outdoor activity that was allowed to open early on under the state guidelines. For example, Joe Steckler Memorial Golf Course, which used to be Shawangunk Country Club, reported a profit in recent weeks, according to Mayor Jeff Kaplan. And the club was on the brink of closure before the village took it over. So that's a good sign. Many restaurants have reported increased business with indoor dining now available after several months of curbside and takeout business. Our office has continued to work hard to promote businesses during the pandemic. For instance, on the homepage of our website, there is an interactive map and expanded listings of restaurants offering curbside, takeout dining, and indoor dining. We've promoted all available activities such as dining, campgrounds, golf, hiking and biking, and numerous virtual events that have been organized by arts and cultural venues and other tourism businesses. We have been in constant contact with our tourism and hospitality businesses through Zoom calls and phone calls to assist them in promoting their businesses and answering any questions relating to the pandemic guidelines, protocols, and reopening dates. You may know, we have a travel guide, and since we've received more than 60 travel guide requests per week since June 1. So there has been a lot of interest in the county, people visiting the county. That's kind of my synopsis. I'd be happy to answer any questions from the committee.
Go ahead, Legislator Archer. Please unmute yourself. Thank you.
Rick, at one point, I know when we were talking about the guide, you were going to take a step back and look at opportunities to maybe cut back, save some money, defer distribution, et cetera. Can you give us an update on what was done?
Sure, Lynn. For example, there were places that we used to distribute, Stewart International Airport, for instance. We decided that since obviously the international people, you know, the coming in from to Stewart, we'd expect a lot of international flights in coming up to Ulster County. So we did, we cut that distribution out. We've also, there's a lot of places that in the past that we've done upstate distribution centers, going almost all the way Canada. We've cut a couple that we printed 20,000 less this year, 100,000. So, you know, those are some of the examples of ones that we have cut back and saved some money on distribution.
Do you have any sense of how much we've actually saved as a result of some of those efforts?
Well, those, I'd say, are ballpark figure, about $4,000 or $5,000 for distribution. I'd have to take a look at, I could certainly take a closer look at it and be happy to share that with the committee, but that's pretty much the estimate.
One more follow-up, if I may, Chairman.
Sure.
I noticed that you have an RFP out for advertising. Can you share what that is?
Sure. That's the our advertising agency. We had them under Cubic. It's our main advertising agency. We had them under a one-year contract. So it expires at the end of this year, so we put out an RFP to solicit bids for advertising.
So this is for next year's advertising contract? I'm sorry, you keep breaking up. So forgive me if I'm repeating something you already said, you thought you said.
I'm sorry. Yeah, it's for...
No, it's okay.
it's for 2021.
Great. Thank you.
Hey, anyone else have any more questions?
I'm sounding good on my end. I'm sorry, you're not getting me.
Yeah, we always sound good on our side. That's
we're hearing every third word, so we're piecing it together.
Okay, well, thank you.
Any other questions for Mr. Remsnyder related to the tourism department? Okay, thank you. And Rick, thank you very much for taking some time out of your evening to visit with us. I appreciate it. And we will be in touch and stay in contact.
Anytime, Mr. Chairman.
And anything we can do to help you out, please reach out to us and we'll do our best to help you keep moving forward there. I know you guys are going to have a little bit of an uphill battle this summer, and you know, we want to be here to support you, actually the fall and winter too. And you know, I want you to know that we'll do what we can to support the tourism department, because we know how important that is to Ulster County's economy. Thank you.
Thank you. I appreciate that, Mr. Chairman.
Okay.
Good night, everyone.
Take care, Rick. So next up, we have UCAT and Ms. Ahmed. How are you tonight?
I'm doing great. How's everyone?
Good. I just really quickly, I just want to let you know one of the reasons, and I think that maybe Deputy Clerk Tantillo called and let you know why I requested you come in. If not, I will give you just a little bit of a heads up. I have received a couple of calls and with concern as to what the policy and the process is going to be for the UCAT buses as far as sanitizing and decontaminating them during the day. And then now I know that you guys announced just yesterday or today that you're going to be expanding even more service. So if you wouldn't mind giving us just a high level of what your plan is to take care of the buses going forward here in the future.
So basically, we, for the months of April and May and the end of March, we were on a severely reduced schedule, really serving essential workers only. We only ran three routes. And in June, we kind of went back up to 60% of service. And as of yesterday, in fact, we're running 12 out of 14 routes between the hours of 8 and 7, roughly. And what we're doing in terms of sanitizing is right in the beginning, we were very fortunate to be looped in with the Emergency Operations Center. So we executed a kind of emergent cleaning contract. So we have cleaners that come every day and sanitize and use the CDC and EPA approved products, sanitize the buses. Right now, because we're still running reduced services, there are additional drivers that are available that are on hand to sanitize the buses. And this is also all posted. I'm going to pin after I finish in the chat for the Zoom, the COVID website. All of this information is there. But the cleaning, the additional cleaning is, there's a deep cleaning every weekend. The buses are cleaned, wiped down every day. We also have one of those foggers that are used. So they're clean throughout the day. And then in terms of actual riders, every other row is kind of cordoned off because there are on some routes now two drivers. The second driver kind of assists people to help them maintain that social distance. And we try to run as much as possible at half capacity. That's kind of changing every day because more and more people are starting to venture out, obviously. So that's our procedures in terms of cleaning, sanitizing, and then in terms of masks, you're required to use a mask if you're on the bus. Obviously, you can't social distance. If you don't have a mask, we provide the masks. We have extra, and we'll just, you know, hand it to the passenger. And we were also fortunate we were invited to be part of a rural transit task force with New York Public Transit Administration, which is kind of like similar to NYSAC. So we got to get together with some of the other transit agencies around the state to figure out best practices. So those are our procedures in terms of riders and PPE. And we also conducted a thorough training of all of our employees. It was about 3 hours long that kind of educated them about COVID, because a lot of our drivers had been at home for you know, they were coming into work only once a week, and I don't know what information they had during that time. So they were educated about PPE, about mask usage, about how the virus actually spreads. And our goal now is to kind of slowly ramp back up to full service. I had hoped that we would go back to full service by August, but we are severely short staffed, so that's kind of a concern of mine. But we were also lucky to receive almost $5 million in federal aid through the CARES Act. Those grants have just been approved by the Department of Labor today. So hopefully we can start drawing that money down and you know, get some liquidity back to the county. And that is gonna be for any operating expense incurred by UCAT starting on January 20th. So we intend to hopefully draw this whole year's budget down from this federal aid that we were lucky to get. And then hopefully some of it will flow into next year. My budget's actually due on Thursday, so I'm very deep in it. But the last thing I have is about passengers. Our ridership is obviously substantially down. For the first 2 months of COVID, for April and May, we were at less than 10% of our usual numbers. And last month, we were back up to about 6,000 riders. Usually we have around 35,000. So you can see kind of the vastness of the gulf that we have to bridge to get back up to full service. But at the same time, I'm in a catch-22 because we don't want to go back to full service. That means people aren't social distancing or staying home.
One quick question. You mentioned that you said you were short staff. Would you mind elaborating about that a little bit as to where it was specifically you were short staff?
Yeah, we're short staff with drivers, actually. We have been short staff for some time. I mean, before COVID, we were in a very tight labor market. That's obviously changed now. And I do have an idea that I don't, you know, can't follow through with at the moment, but if school is indeed, you know, closed or limited in the fall, I would like to get together with the school bus companies to see if there's something we can do, because there is a need for us to go back to full service. We are starting to get complaints where people have to go to work and they can't get to work in the same way they would have. So we have right now, I believe we have 10 part-time driver positions open. So those are non-CSEA positions. And that actually helped me achieve my 10% budget decrease.
Thank you very much. Legislator Archer, please unmute.
Didn't you get a number of drivers from the commingling with the Kingston bus system?
From Kingston, we got 3 full-time drivers. They were part of the memorandum of agreement. Got 1 part-time driver, and that's it.
So it's the part-time positions that you have open?
I have right now, I have 1 full-time driver position that is, all of these things are part of the hiring freeze. Right. So I have 1 full-time position open, and I have about 8 part-time positions. And even as I was doing my budget, when I looked at the overtime for the first quarter of the year, it was just astronomical, because you're having to rely on the contract provisions where the senior most driver is getting the overtime and making, you know, $35 an hour, which ends up being a lot. So we had actually burned through a third of our overtime budget. So I'm just looking for ways to get kind of creative to, I think everyone is, so I don't think I'm alone in that.
Thank you.
Legislator Uchitel?
This is not so much a question as it is a statement. I just want to recognize that, you know, Sasha, you've done an incredible job, in my view, stepping into this role during this crisis. You know, we just heard from Rick. Rick, let's just say this wasn't Rick's first year on the job here and in the helm there. And I think, you know, stepping into the helm here at UCAT, you've done a great job. And at the height of the onset of the pandemic in March, you helped me deal with a constituent issue that involved UCAT and involved COVID. And you were very responsive. And I just want to thank you personally for that. And I know that my constituent that, you know, I had heard from also really appreciates it. So thank you.
Thanks, Abe. That's much appreciated. Just so the group knows, the issue that Abe, that was kind of very early on, and it was when we didn't know much about testing and how we were going to get testing to people. And the Department of Health has just been absolutely amazing in getting us what we need, whether it's PPE, disinfectant. You know, it's been a real quick crash course in learning the ins and outs of all the other county departments, because we've had to work with OFA, with emergency management, public works, Department of Health, obviously, and just everyone has been so supportive of our staff because they recognized immediately that UCAT is really the staff that's interacting with it's one of the most public facing departments. And because the governor considered our department essential, we had to remain open as things changed, you know, every day. And it's really a testament to my staff, who has been absolutely amazing and flexible and hasn't gone through something like this before. And unfortunately, Tony Rozier, my deputy, couldn't be on the call tonight, but I've really leaned very hard on all of the staff, especially her, because she has those years at City Bus and, you know, has lived through flooding and hurricanes and brought that knowledge to the table. But just to step back 1 second, so our drivers have access to free testing. They can go up to Golden Hill and get tested right away, and we do have the same procedures as the county does in terms of, you know, temperature checks every day and, you know, making sure people are reporting whether they've been in contact with anyone who's COVID positive, just to make sure there's that extra level of safety. The challenge that we're facing, the challenge of the week, as I like to call it, is people going on vacation out of state. That's definitely been difficult.
Well, thank you very much. I appreciate you taking some time. Does anyone have any other questions? No? Okay. Again, thank you very much. You guys are doing a great job there. And I know it's a very difficult circumstance that you started your career in here as the director of UCAT, and you know, it's just going to make UCAT stronger and better going down the road with the experience we're gaining now. So again, thank you for taking the time to come and visit with our committee. I do appreciate it. Anything we can do to help along the way, please just pick up the phone. And I know all the other legislators on this committee feel the same way. You can contact any of us at any time, and we'll do what we can to help.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
Okay. Thank you. Okay, so we're going to move on to resolutions. We have, again, 232 has been asked to be postponed by the sponsor.
I'd like to make a motion to postpone 232.
I'd second that.
Okay, all in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay, thank you. So the next one is going to be resolution 246, which is authorizing track removal for the Ulster County Midtown Linear Park in the city of Kingston. And the Department of Planning will, I guess, will be handling that control of that specific operation. I'll entertain any motions for that. Legislator Litz.
I'll make a motion for discussion.
Okay.
I'll second.
Okay, thank you. And for discussion. Legislator Litz.
Yes. two things I'm requesting. One is we continually have ambiguity in these resolutions because we, for some reason, don't put mileposts down. Instead of having, you know, somewhere close to this intersection to that one over there, let's nail it down. Let's put in the resolution what the mileposts are where we're removing this track. And then I also request that all legislators get a copy of a map where it's annotated where this is being removed.
Thank you. Just for your information, I just got this information prior to the meeting, and I will ask that it be amended to the resolution, and it's the exact milepost is 2.98 to milepost 3.23. Thank you, Legislator Litz.
Thank you, Kathy.
Anyone else?
Was that a motion to amend the resolution, Legislator Woods?
I don't know if it has to be amended, but it just has to be clarified. I mean, you can have it stated the way it is and then just in parentheses, or put the milepost in and then put parentheses, the street name or the location name. But from this point forward, it needs to be.
No. Okay, Vicki.
What Vicki's doing.
Vicki looks like she has something she wants to say, Herb.
Legislator Litz, that was a motion to amend. That's exactly what you did, and that was correct. Good job.
We have a second on the amendment.
Second.
All right. All in favor of the amendment to add the exact milepost of the track to be removed? All in favor?
Aye.
Anyone opposed? Great. Thank you.
And they'll also supply a map to all the legislators as to the location annotated.
Will do.
Thank you. Onto the amended resolution.
I'll make a motion for the amended resolution or resolution as amended.
Second.
Okay, all in favor?
Aye.
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 Opposed? Okay, thank you. So then we'll move on to 247, which I am assuming is a public hearing required for this. Mr. Doyle?
I'll make a motion.
For discussion, and I'll
for discussion. Yeah.
Okay, thank you.
It's for the ag districts, not for the
linear. Yeah, it doesn't relate to the railroad. It relates to ag districts.
Okay, because usually we have them right next to each other when there's a public hearing required. So thank you for clearing that up.
Yeah.
So would you like to talk about this at all, Mr. Doyle? Or
sure. The agricultural district add-ins are a provision in the state statute under ag and markets law. The county has an ag district add-in process, which essentially begins on March 1st, and it runs to March 30th. We need to hold a public hearing from a process standpoint. Between the public hearing and the legislative vote, the county's Ag Farmland Protection Board will be providing recommendations to the legislature. The legislature, when it gets those recommendations, can either accept them or it can reject them or it can modify them. After that vote is taken, it goes to the Commissioner of Agriculture, and the Commissioner of Agriculture can certify, and he can also add, subtract, or modify the district additions as proposed.
So we do this every year then?
Yes, we do.
Okay, yep. Great. Thank you.
We have a large...
Go ahead. Sorry.
And we have a large crop this year. We have, no pun intended, we have 16 applications going through about 10 towns and about a little over 600 acres being proposed to be added to the district.
Well, that's good news. That's always good news.
Yep.
Legislator Litz.
Dennis, in years past, we would accept additions by ag district. Now, are these applications for all districts, or is it going to be for Ag District 1 or Ag District 6? Or
the districts, the applications come in for all districts, and then we assign them to the nearest district. So when they're actually recommended, when you see the report for the recommendations, the report will basically go through and recommend them for various districts as they come in. But they're geographically diverse right now. But you're correct. As it finally gets adopted, they would be added to specific districts.
I mean, years ago, we would amend 1 year Ag District 1, and then next year we do Ag District 6.
Yep. Let me explain
we're doing
it. There's
all the districts all at one time.
No, let me explain the difference. These are annual additions, and so they can be applied for to be essentially put in any district, and we go through that process as I described. The process you're describing, we actually have an 8-year review function. Districts come up for review in their totality every year. And we've just completed all of our reviews. So we probably got another 3 or 4 years before we'll see districts come back in for individual district review. And it'll start with District 1, I believe, in the towns of down in the Marlboro southeastern corner of the county. And we used to have 16 agricultural districts. Many years ago, we consolidated them into 4.
Thanks, Dennis.
So any other questions on this? All right, I'll take a motion to move it for the vote.
So moved.
Second.
Okay, all in favor? Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Okay, thank you. That concludes our resolutions. I'm going to now give the floor to Dr. Wright, Deputy Executive for the County, to give us a brief overview of how things are going on our newly established housing task force that we worked so hard on this committee to get going over the past 3 or 4 months. Thank you.
Thanks, Legislator Cahill. So I'm pleased to let you know that the Housing Advisory Committee had its kickoff meeting on June 18th. I think we've got a really great group of 9 folks, really engaged, lots of thoughtful discussion at the first meeting. You know, we basically went through what the schedule for the project is, the scope of the study with Pattern. Pattern's going to be working on data and demographics and profiles of the housing situation and affordability by municipality over the summer. The committee's going to review those in September. Then we're going to start a public input process, be looking at both how to talk about that data and what it means about the affordability picture throughout the county, and as well as strategies that we can pursue to address that. So we'll be doing that process in the fall with the committee reviewing the final report and the final strategies in December, and the report out by the end of the year. So I think we're just feeling really positive about that group and about that process. Dennis, I don't know if you've got anything you want to add about that.
No, I think you're absolutely correct. It was very heartening to see a committee come together so quickly with a lot of support and a lot of knowledge. And that was really good. And I also would say that Patterns have hit the ground running, so to speak. They have actually provided a substantial number of demographics. We started off with two towns to look at, just to see what the makeup of the demographics were and whether the committee was comfortable with the data we're providing. Interestingly, the County Planning Board had to review an inclusionary zoning provision for the city of Kingston at its June meeting, and we were able to use some of the demographics from Patterns report and some of the sources from Patterns report as part of that response back to the city in terms of what constitutes an affordability for the city of Kingston.
Right. So I just got a really couple of quick questions in regard to that. So we know now that there's a plan to use the former jail as a housing, and that's really, I think that's a great utilization of that site and spot. I think that's really probably, you know, one of the best things that we're going to do here going forward. Is there any, I know you guys just got the bid stuff together on that. How's that going?
Yeah, so the legislature had asked us to look at county-owned properties that might be suitable for housing development, and we picked out the site of the former jail as the first really most obvious place to do that. So we're really pleased that we got 5 responses to the RFP, all from, you know, reputable, qualified firms. We are in the process of working with the legislature to put together a local development corporation that will be the ones to receive that property from the county, form the agreements with the developer, review those submissions to the RFQ process, and you know, work through that whole process with the selected developer. Mm-hmm. So we're looking to get that process underway and have a developer selected by the end of the summer.
Right. Great. Thank you. And my second question, and of course any other legislator has questions, feel free to chime in at any time. I know I call into the Patterns meetings. They have, they're very focused on housing right now and the rebound of the economy based on the COVID situation. So, I mean, are you going to be looking at, you know, the projected, you know, everybody's talking about this big worry about people being evicted in sometime late in the summer and early fall based on what's happened here. And are you guys going to be like trying to get that data folded in at that point? You know, how are you going to approach that?
Yeah, so we put a task into the scope to basically look at whatever data we could on the impact that COVID was having on the housing situation. You know, most of the data that they're working with is going to be older data, right. Any data they're getting from the federal government, it's going to be on the pre-COVID picture. So we asked them to both work with us to identify what data they could to illuminate what was happening, as well as to look at some scenarios, you know, where we don't have the data to say, you know, these are some of the trends that we're seeing, and if this continues, what's the implications for the affordability situation?
So do you guys have a hook into the civil division of the sheriff's department that will be executing evictions, right? Will you guys be checking in with them to see if there's an uptick or anything like that to get that data to throw in there? Because it's a big fear. There's a lot of people worried about that. I'm one of them, you know, that's going to happen. And, you know, everybody hasn't been paying their rent or trying, you know, to be able to pay their rent, and they haven't been able to, and it's still going to be due. And so we'd like to really make sure that we're addressing that need when it does eventually arise. So thank you.
So one of the things that we did do is we were able to essentially repurpose a housing rehabilitation grant that we had to do make emergency payments for rent for various individuals at below an 80% income level. And we stood that program up, and it started, they took applications, and we have about 50 families now that will be making whole up to $3,000 for 3 months rent outside the city of Kingston because of the funding source we can't work within the city of Kingston. So that program is up and running, and it's going to make those payments. But I think you're right, legislator. We're concerned about what happens after if the unemployment runs out and other things run out. We're concerned about what happens in August rather than what happened currently. The state has stood up a program called it's $100 million for rent relief, emergency rent relief. We're looking at that program to see what's out there. In addition, the state has $29 million in additional community development block grant funds, and they haven't released, those are for what I would call non-entitlement counties, which Ulster County is one, as compared to other counties in the region, such as Orange and Dutchess, which are entitlement counties, which are gonna get what they call emergency solution grants. So we would anticipate that we're going to, when they decide how they're going to use that money, that the county would apply for it. And I can't imagine that the money won't be used for housing, that a portion of that money won't be used for housing.
Right. So you said there's 50 families are getting it. Who's administering that? Those
funds? We amended the contract that we had with RUPCO.
Okay. Thank
RUPCO had an existing contract. So we amended that contract. They had a lot more administrative work that they had to do with respect to this, but they didn't, the monies were the same. They kept the administrative monies the same.
Mm-hmm.
So we went through a whole process of getting that approved from the state. We had to have the criteria approved by the state through the Office of Community Development. We went through that entire process and then we were able to release that and do a press release on it. We also did releases through the chamber and businesses, et cetera. And they had, quite frankly, what we thought was a lukewarm response given what we thought the need was. And some of the work that you talk about hooking up with the sheriff's department, the nonprofits that own housing and the for-profit subsidized housing folks also have a pretty good handle on who's paying rent and who's not.
Right.
And what they're telling us is essentially that for the month of April and May, their rents actually went up. Their rent collections actually went up as compared to what happened in March. And a lot of that, they think, is the fact of the unemployment and stimulus checks that came through.
Right. I believe that to be true. Right. Thank you. Is there any questions for Mr. Doyle or Dr. Wright? Okay. Thank you again. Dr. Wright, you seem to be here every month with us. You know, maybe next month we'll give you a month off. And I do want to just thank you again for taking the time, because you do not hesitate to pick up your phone when I call. And it seems like things are really going in the right direction there. And, you know, I know that for Legislator Petit, who is on the call as well, I know that this was a big thing for her. and for legislator parity as well in the previous legislature. And I just, I'm very happy to see things are moving in the right direction. And we're, you know, really, you guys feel good with the folks that you're working with. So again, anything we can do, just let us know.
Well, thank you. And we're really delighted with the collaboration that we have and the progress that we're making. Since you mentioned it, I will be away the first week of August. So
all right, perfect.
I can give you any highlights to present for me.
Okay, great. Thank you. Okay, so that's all we have on our agenda. Hold on one second. I just got a couple of chats here. Okay, that's what we said. I just want to check our agenda real quick. I believe that's all we have. And so anyone have any new business? Okay, at this time, I'll open it up for, I know there's several people from the public on the call. And if you would like to say something, I'll ask Deputy Clerk Mahler to unmute the folks somehow or another. We should be able to find out maybe through the chat function if you'd like to make a comment. So Jay, why don't you just unmute everybody real quick, and then if someone wants to speak, we'll let them speak. So does anyone have a public comment at this time? Okay, great. Thank you very much. Okay, I'll entertain a motion.
Hearing none, I'll make a motion for adjournment.
Okay. Second from Legislator Uchitel. Okay, folks, all in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
Opposed.
All right. Thank you guys very much for a quick meeting, and I appreciate the other folks coming in and giving us some information.
Have a good night. Be safe and healthy.
Thank you, everyone.
Good night, everyone. Bye-bye. Take care.
Thank you. You too.